This is King's Christmas. It was the Saturday before Christmas, and I was alone. I spent Friday night watching my New York Rangers lose a close hockey game to the Senators. Well, no one cared about hockey in my newly adopted city of Charlotte, North Carolina, and nobody cared about me either. A stranger in a strange land. Well, I knew that would change in time. I'd make friends, but that gave me very little solace this Christmas. It was all of my own doing. The weather, congestion, and criminal activity at the Jersey Shore had reached critical mass. I finally made good on my vow to seek a warmer and friendlier climate. Well, it meant leaving my girl and dog behind. I tried to persuade Jamie to come with me, but she was running a successful business of her own and needed to be near New York. She'd agreed to keep the dog until I could get settled into permanent digs down here. My golden retriever, Bosco, was our only link, and I was afraid that would be gone as soon as my house was finished and safe for the pup. I'd bought a ramshackle place on Lake Norman. At the end of the summer, I hired a local builder to help me refurbish it. The house was as incomplete as my life was. I had only power in the rooms I used most frequently, the bedroom, kitchen, office. The rest were in the drywall stage, with loose wires and rough plumbing exposed. By springtime, the place would be restored to her former glory, even sweeter than she was originally. I could then reclaim Bosco and once more plead for my girl to join me, but I didn't expect her answer to be any different. But it was Christmas. Like Ebenezer Scrooge, I was looking back to the past, ahead to the future, but numb to the present. I decided to change that. Why not deck the halls, just for myself, since I had no one to share the Christmas spirit with? I'd cook a turkey with all the trimmings, wrap a present to myself, pretend it didn't come from me, decorate the place with holly, mistletoe, top it off with a Christmas tree straight from the forest. I was determined to go all in, a real tree and not a weeks-old remnant at some picked-over gas station parking lot. Adventure up to the mountains. Cut one myself. Tie it onto the roof of my SUV. String some sleigh bells across my bumper. Maybe even have dinner at some cozy alpine tavern on the way back. A quick web search came up with a dozen places that advertised cut-your-own trees within a two-hour radius. I settled on one called Mary's Christmas Tree Farm. The site had a live webcam, and there was snow on the ground. I gassed up my car, flipped on the Holly Channel on my satellite radio, and headed north for the hills. The air was crisp, clean, sunny skies in Charlotte, a brilliant Carolina blue. They gave way to puffy clouds and eventually a bright overcast as I neared the mountain region in the northwestern part of the state. There were flurries in the forecast up there. Perfect. My memories drifted back as I drove to past expeditions in search of Christmas trees. The earliest recollection I conjured was as a 12-year-old, growing up in central Virginia. It's just my dad and me trekking into the deep woods not far from our house. I had a red radio flyer wagon that I pulled behind us, and in it was a length of rope, a saw, small hatchet. I lugged a big thermos of hot chocolate that my mom insisted we take over my dad's protests. We'd only be gone a couple hours, he said. And she said it was really cold, and he'd thank her for it later. He gave in, but he couldn't ever admit that she was right, even when he knew she was. The tree we wound up with was nothing like the perfectly full-shaped trees you see today. As we trudged through the snow down a narrow forest path, we'd stop every so often at a likely prospect. My dad would size it up and then shake his head slowly, pointing out brown spots or broken limbs or insect damage. I didn't mind. Our frosty breath condensing in front of us, the scent of running cedar and wood smoke, was invigorating. My father was holding three part-time jobs just to get by in those days. We had precious little time alone together, so I treasured these moments. He was dispensing bits of hard wisdom in his typical clipped manner. passing along his life story in bite-sized portions for the next generation. He was particularly wistful as he spoke about his dad at Christmas, how excited he was upon opening the colorfully wrapped presents that Santa had brought. A Mattel Fanner 50 with greeny stick'em caps, space boots, plastic bowling pins, a Davy Crockett coonskin cap. The BB rifle version of old Betsy was too expensive. Maybe next year. I discovered years later that his dad had abandoned his family when my father was only 7. Well, we finally came upon that perfect tree for our silver tinsel glassed ornaments and multicolored lights. It was a 6-foot-tall Scotch pine with long needles, conical in shape. A few nips in the right spots, and this'll look great, my dad said. It was crestfallen when the tree finally came down. The far side of it was wedged up against another tree that gave it the illusion of fullness, but it was sparse. A temporary setback. I said we could just leave it there, find a better one, but my dad said that would be wrong, a waste of God's resources. He made a mistake, and we needed to live with the consequences, not punish the tree for failing to live up to our expectations. Besides, we could place it in the corner of our den so the bad side wouldn't show. Well, as I drove north on I-77, I branched off onto a 2-lane country highway, winding my way higher and higher toward Banner Elk, where Mary's tree farm was. My ears popped every so often. Eventually, the macadam gave way to a gravel drive up a steep incline. I saw the tree farm a few hundred yards ahead. At winter solstice in the late afternoon, the cloud-covered sun was barely visible over the snow-capped peaks. I'd come prepared with axe and saw like I had all those years ago with my dad. It was likely that Mary, or whoever ran the place, had helpers to actually cut the trees, especially for insurance purposes if some lumberjack wannabe with a chainsaw sliced off a finger instead of a branch. I saw a tall woman with French braided red hair supervising a couple of Latin workers, assumed it was Mary. They were bundling a beautiful Fraser fir into some netting. She was wearing mud-spattered jeans, a red plaid flannel shirt, thick leather gloves, a female version of Paul Bunyan. But the woodsy clothes couldn't conceal her amazing physique. She turned in my direction. I was blown away. She was the spitting image of my first love, the only woman I'd ever come close to marrying.